Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning Ashare. We are learning Lidui Nishmasa and Lezecha Nishmasa Miriam Fun, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak Alaha HaShalom. Our Neshama should have a continuous aliyah in the merit of the Torah learning that we share this evening. So let's continue. Last time we spoke about Ahavas Yisrael, if you recall, we ended with the Shir, the second half of Shir. So it was about love for other Jews and how we are all connected. Even if we're different, we are all connected. So we are on page 228, if anybody has the Sefer with them, on page 228 of the second Sefer. And we are on the topic called Oneness with Hashem and Yisrael. Is this where I'm up to? Yeah. Yeah. Oneness with Hashem and Yisrael. So I'm just going to read the last paragraph that we did, but not say the same insights that we did. Okay, the Gemara says, the friends of Iyov, that when one was not well, the others knew of it, even though they lived hundreds of miles away. It discusses the method they used for divining each other's troubles. What is the root of the ability to know what's happening to someone who lives so far away? It's the hidden power of oneness. I'm not repeating the insights. I'm just reading the paragraph so we know where we're up to. That binds every Jew to his fellow. Just as if one's foot hurt, the whole body feels pain because your whole body's connected. So if your foot hurts, everything hurts. So too, when one is privileged to connect deeply with the souls of Yisrael, he feels his pain as if it is his own pain. It is known that tzaddikim feel the pain of others because the hidden power of oneness binds all soul to each other, and it is revealed in the tzaddik soul. So when the branch suffers, the root feels it as well. We spoke about that last time. New paragraph. To attain unconditional love, which is the chapter that we are in, unconditional love, so love not conditional on anything, you should adopt the process of divesting your soul from your body. Divesting your soul from your body. So that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. I'm now going to quote from an outside source. I'm going to repeat that sentence again. To attain unconditional love, you should adopt the process of divesting your soul from your body. Separating your neshama from your guf, so to speak, as much as is possible in Olam Hazeh. So that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. This is not just in order that you should that you not consider the body important, but so your soul should be attached to the spiritual world. So you need to divest your soul from your body, so bodily conditions will hardly affect you. So I'm going to quote from a very unusual source, but as you know, usually what I'm reading, not usually, whatever I'm reading during those weeks makes its appearance in Shir. So I just finished reading a very different book. It's on my website as recommended reading. It's called Jane Haining. I recommend it. A Life of Love and Courage. I don't remember who recommended it to me. Somebody. By Mary Miller. It's extremely interesting. It's about a Scottish woman, not Jewish. If you see the cover, you see it's Auschwitz. Who was a missionary in Hungary. It was the Scottish Mission School for Jews in Hungary. And she went there in the early 30s. And the school is a missionary school. And when the war comes, she refused. She was a good person. I mean, this caveat is it's, you know, she was, when they went to Yad Vashem and asked them to put her in the righteous amongst the nations, the response was, we don't consider someone who comes to convert our people righteous amongst the nations. Interestingly, she is in Yad Vashem as the righteous amongst the nations. She refused to leave the school, abandoned the girls. She did her best to provide them with food. She sold the yellow stars. She had pain for them. She was a very religious woman. It's very interesting. She was sent to Auschwitz. I'm not ruining it for you. It's well known. And she was killed in Auschwitz. She was one of the only few Scottish. She refused to leave Hungary. Anyway, I'm going to quote from this book. Because when I read this in the Sefer, that you have to adopt the process of divesting your soul from your body so that bodily conditions will hardly affect you, I thought of something that I read in here. I just finished this last week or the week before. Okay. It's not about her story, Jane Haining. It's a quick read. It's a short 200 and something pages. It's small pages. It's very interesting. A Life of Love and Courage. You know, you feel torn when you read it. On the one hand, she was trying to help the Jews when the war came, but she was converting Jews to Christianity. So anyway, the author quotes an excerpt from Viktor Frankl, which is what I am going to quote from. Okay? Viktor Frankl, I'm sure you all have heard his name. I never read his work. Did any of you read his work? I never read his work. Viktor Frankl was an eminent Yudid. Wow. Okay, I've added to my list. Viktor Frankl was an eminent Jewish psychiatrist in Vienna. He was deported by the Nazis in 1942, first to Theresienstadt, and then in 44 to Auschwitz. Jane Haining was in Auschwitz in 44. From there, he was sent to Dachau as a slave laborer until liberation in April of 45. So from 42 to 45, he was interned in concentration camps. Frankl preserved his humanity partly by observing how prisoners were affected psychologically by the concentration camps. This is how he survived. He sort of had a project. Again, I did not read the book. I said that from the outset. I'm just quoting two pages from here, a page and a half. After liberation, he narrated his own story and published his observations in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl notes, for most prisoners, was obviously a reason I'm bringing this to you, the first stage of reaction was precipitated by acute physical suffering, the physical affliction of the body, hunger, pain, extreme discomfort from the conditions, the cold, the beatings, infestation, lice, took hold. So the first stage was acute physical suffering, starvation, pain, cold, beatings, infestation, lice. Psychologically, prisoners reacted with shock, disbelief, and denial. With all known landmarks from their previous lives torn away, most in the early stages of their imprisonment, simply could not believe what was happening to them. Humiliation, shame, and bewilderment confused all reason in this world of arbitrary rules and inhuman behavior. They had to try to come to terms with the commands that made no sense, but could result in instant beatings or death if a prisoner became conspicuous or failed to comply immediately. That was the first stage. Acute physical suffering. Shock, disbelief, denial. Some never recovered from that first stage and simply gave up. Some died. Some were obviously killed. They were all killed, but you understand. Some, he says, gave up. They were known as the Muslimin, the living skeletons. It's things that I could talk about, but Baruch Hashem, I have no fathoming of what I'm really saying. But others, Viktor Frankl noted, however, to some extent adapted. And I found this fascinating, and it's actually a strange example, or a very extreme example of what I just read in the book, the Mechaber, our Sefer, which is that it is possible to divest your soul from your body so that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. I'm not quoting from Viktor Frankl. That's from our Sefer, Velvavi. And when I read that, because I was reading this book, this is exactly what came to mind. Viktor Frankl continues and said, some never recovered from the shock and simply gave up and died. Others, however, to some extent, adapted. How? Viktor Frankl noted that apathy usually followed by initial denial. Viktor Frankl noted that apathy usually followed the initial denial. So the initial denial, the shock and the disbelief, the physical suffering, then apathy. Emotions became blunted and prisoners lost the ability to care as much about what was happening to them and around them. This provided them with a protective shell, which helped them to become less sensitive to the beatings and the unremitting cruelty. Frankl observed his own surprise. This also extended to being able to view the suffering of others with indifference. This was a tool for survival. They actually removed themselves from their physical self. In a spiritual sense, the emotional, psychological sense, again, I'm not chas v'shalom saying anything on my own. I am quoting, a few of you mentioned that you did read Viktor Frankl. I hope, Be'ezrat Hashem, to add it, not I hope, I will add it to my list, and Be'ezrat Hashem, I will get it in the right time. But this really reminded me of what we are learning in the Sefer. You can divest your soul from your body so that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. This is a very extreme. We should never know. Ribbono shel Olam should have rachmanis on us. We're in difficult times on the world stage. Ribbono shel Olam should really have rachmanis on us. But Viktor Frankl noted that after the shock, the denial, the disbelief, and the physical suffering, some died and gave up, and some adapted and survived. How? They became blunted. They lost the ability to care as much about what happened to them and around them. And that protective shell helped them to become less sensitive to the beatings and the unremitting cruelty. Surprisingly, it extended to being able to view the suffering of others with indifference. Quote from Viktor Frankl's book, the prisoner who had passed into the second stage of psychological reaction did not avert his eyes anymore. His feelings were blunted, and he watched what happened to others unmoved. And it's an extreme, I'm aware, example of what the Mechaber is talking about. But in such a situation, it gave the prisoners in a Gehenim that we can never fathom. I come from four grandparents who survived the concentration camps, three of who were married, three who had children before the war. I could talk about it, but I don't understand anything. But Viktor Frankl noticed that when people, concentration camp prisoners, were able to remove themselves physically from themselves, they were able to survive to an extent. No one should, I'm not saying anything. I mean, I am, but I'm not. So there is such a human condition of being able to remove yourself from bodily conditions so that they hardly affect you. That's literally, now I'm going to go back and read the first sentence of the first new paragraph that I read tonight. To attain unconditional love, you should adopt the process of divesting your soul from your body so that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. And that's an extreme example of the ability of the human being to remove themselves from their body. Another example, oh my gosh. Did you ever read the book, The Sun Does Shine? Totally different kind of book. Highly recommend, it's on my website. It's fascinating. It's about an African-American man who sat on death row for almost 40 years in the state of Alabama. He was interred in the early 1980s, 81. My son actually just showed me a picture of him yesterday going to vote. It said underneath, I forget his name, it escapes me because I wasn't planning to say it. It says his name, it says sat on death row for 39, 38 years, going to exercise his freedom today, and he was, showed him going to vote. It was a fascinating book. I mean, he was wrongly, it was complete racism. And he was in solitary. How did he survive? Oh yeah, I wish I would have thought of this before. I would have read an excerpt from the book too. He removed his body from his mind and from what was happening. He took trips in his mind. He pretended he was with his girlfriend. It's not an unsneezed book, or I wouldn't read it, or I wouldn't recommend it. It's Tsanua. There's nothing unsneezed in it. He imagined that he was, I think, Blean Eater. It's not nothing that you can't read, I think. It's not a Jewish book if you read secular nonfiction. He took trips with his girlfriend in his mind. He pretended he was married, a family man. He went to work. He came home. He was a sports player. He took trips. He survived almost four decades. And he knew he was wrongly incarcerated. He did nothing wrong. He was completely framed by the white courts. Read it. How did he survive? He removed his soul from his body so that bodily conditions will hardly affect you. It's possible to live in a state where your body becomes less important than your soul. It's very powerful. It shows you the power of the human mind. This is not just in order, I'm going back to our Sefer, that you not consider the body important. Okay, so it's not that you should think your body's not important. Your body is important and we need to take care of it. Hashem gave us one body and we need to serve him as best we can and take care of it. But also, why is it important? So your soul will be attached to the spiritual world. Your soul should be attached to the more important world. So what gave him the ability to survive was detaching himself from his bodily conditions. Viktor Frankl notes, what gave some prisoners the ability to survive is detaching themselves from their imprisonment and their bodily conditions. So we want our soul to be attached more to the spiritual world. As long as the entry into the spiritual world is only occasional, there cannot be unconditional love. So if you are primarily rooted in Gashmias, Gufani, Chovas HaIvarim, and you are only occasionally taking a trip to the ruchnius, neshamadik, chovas halavavus aspect of yourself, then you cannot attain unconditional love with God, because you're more in this physical world than in the spiritual world. So the goal is to become more than Olam Haba while you are in Olam Hazah. It's very deep. It's a big avoda. But when you think of the examples that I brought tonight, we see from people who have suffered the worst suffering, it's possible to do. We should never be tested. We should never be forced to become more soul-focused from such suffering. We should become more soul-focused because of our desire to cling to the Ribbono Shel Olam. In times like we are in now, we must remember, Ein lanu al mi lehisha'ein ela al avinu shebashamayim. Do we want to be more in the physical world or more in the spiritual world? The difference is, as we said, conditional love is external. It relates to the externality. It can come and go. While unconditional love is internal and intrinsic. It can never cease. Well, I'm on to my next book already. I finished Jane Heening the week before last. And I am reading, some of you I'm sure have heard of it. It's very famous. The Choice, Embrace the Possible. Yeah, is that what it's called? Yeah, it's upstairs next to, on my night table. Embrace the Possible. It's pretty graphic about when she went through an Auschwitz. I don't know if it's hard. It's hard to read. But her mother told her, it's also a Holocaust memoir, before she was taken away, that her mother told her they can control everything but your mind. And that was her tool also. So we see the power of separating ourselves from our body, of not being so external, of being internal and intrinsic, and that unconditional love and that unconditional connection to God can never cease. And no one could take that away from me. Fear over the pandemic, concern over the economy, worry over the political situation, that future that's unknown. No one can take away from me my connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam if my love is internal and intrinsic. If I am more external focused, if I only come and go with Ruchnius, it's harder to maintain Ahavas Hashem. If one is only occasionally, we are, you know, it's hard times. It's taka hard times. We need more than ever to strengthen our emunah and our love, to remember who's in charge, to remember that the Ribbono Shel Olam has a plan. I saw a Geshmak Var by Rav Elimelech Biderman. Avram, when we meet him, he's Avram. Aleph Beis Resh Mem. In Perek Yud Zayin of Bereishis, he becomes Avraham. After he becomes Avraham, Perek Yud Zayin, Avhaman Gayim Nisaticha. And by the way, I believe it's brought down in the Gemara that whoever calls Avraham and Sarah, Avram and Sarai is over a love. You're not allowed to call them. Yehoshua is sometimes Hoshea, sometimes Yehoshua. Yaakov is Yaakov and Yisrael. Once Avraham becomes Avraham, that's it. And Sarai becomes Sarah, that's it. And you can't call them their previous names. After he has his name changed to Avraham, he does Bris Milah right at the end of Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Ches, the angels say to Sarah, Yishtecha, Yinei Ba'ohel, Ka'eis Ashuv, Shav Ashuv Edecha, Ka'eis Chaya, Yinei Ben Lasar Yishtecha, Perachav Alf, Yitzchak is born, and that's a continuity of Knesset Yisrael. So Rabbi Elimelech Biderman writes in last week's Torah Wellsprings, teaches, Avram, Aleph, Beis, Resh, Mem, stands for Rabos, Machshavos, Belev, Ish. You have to switch the Roshei Tevos. Rabos is Resh, Machshavos is Mem, Belev, Beis, Ish is Aleph. That's the four letters that make up Avram. When he was Avram, he wasn't Ra'u yet. He wasn't worthy yet. He wasn't able yet to become the father of the Umay Yisraelis. because we are not a people who stops at saying Rabos Machshavos Blevish. When the hey was added, the hey stands for the second half of the pasuk. Atzas Hashem, Atzas Hashem, he. There's the extra hey. Atzas Hashem, he sakum. So when he was Avram, and he came from Ur Kasdim and Haran, Ram says he was steeped, Meshuka, but Ur Kasdim, Ben Ovde Kochavim Hatipshim. That's a quote from the Rambam. You can look it up. Helchos Ovde Kochavim, Parak Alf Halachabis. He was steeped amongst idol worshippers, and his father worshipped idols, and his mother worshipped idols, and he worshipped along with them. Go look it up. When he was Avram, Rabbis Machshu was believed, that is not the Mahalach of Knesset Yisrael. That's not the Hashkafa of my people, said God. When he became Avraham, Va'atzos Hashem he takum, now he's ready to have Yitzchak. Now he's ready to be the father of the continuity of Knesset Yisrael. We have to be as much as possible, more attached to our internal, intrinsic, neshamigdik side than our external side. Because the world is so basar-based. I hope anyone besides from Yiz Aleinu has been changed since that shir that we had with Chobani Basar. Especially coming up to the elections, it was taka something to focus on in our tefillos. We have to remember that Hashem has a plan. And these are the times when we have to be mechazik or amuna even more than before. And Avraham, ata yadati, this week's parasha, ki yare Elokim ata. After that kedav, lo chasachas bincha, asichidcha mimeni. And even when it doesn't make sense, I know, atzos Hashem hitakum. So we must be bound up inherently with our spiritual self. Otherwise, we can come, we can go. And such attachment that is occasional, okay? So occasional, of course, you're on the right path. Chas v'shalom, nobody should think that you should abandon the occasional connection to your intrinsic, neshamadic side of self. But that attachment that's occasional, not constant, we need to make it more of a focus. We don't want to attain only conditional love. I'm on top page 229. Only one whose life is essentially attached to ruchnias can attain unconditional love. Our lives must be essentially attached to ruchnias, essentially. Of course, we live in this world. We must take care of our physical selves. No one leaves here and think that. That's not what I mean. That's ludicrous and asinine. You have to eat. You have to shower. You have to use the facilities. You have to go to the doctor. You have to get your flu vaccine. You have to be warm. You have to clothe yourself, obviously. But what's the focus? For what is the purpose for which I do all those things? The purpose has to be to deepen my connection to God, and I can only serve God if I'm healthy. So therefore, I need to be healthy to deepen connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the last thing I just read was, only one whose life is essentially attached to ruchnias can attain unconditional love. And this section that we are learning really reminded me of Rav Aaron Leib Steinman. Oh, it's coming, mamash up to Zirtzei, Chof Dalid Kislev. Because Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, if there was anyone in our generation who is removed from his gashmias side of life, and who was able to remove his neshama from his body while he lived, was Rav Aaron Leib Steinman. I'm going to quote a couple of excerpts from the Sefer. It's a biography, but it should have the status of Sefer. In terms of, the Chazon Ish was the one who said that the best mussar is stories of Gedolim. So you could say it's a mussar Sefer. You didn't read it, you should add it to the list, okay? You could decide the order in which you want to read them. But it's the Art Scroll biography of Rav Aaron Leib. Rav Chizkiyahu Mishkovsky drew a comparison between the aspirations and goals of Rav Aaron Leib and the Chofetz Chaim. Their thought processes, their shunning of material items, their stress on giving charity, the sincere, unfathomable humility of both the Chavetz Chaim and Rav Aaron Leib, coupled with their profound yearning for the coming of Mashiach. When it comes to most people, So Rav Chizkiyahu Mishkovsky, yeah. When it comes to most people, although we do think of Olam Haba while we are alive, we are all, to an extent, B'nei Olam Hazeh. We live here. And we delight in pleasures of this world. A notable exception was Rav Aaron Leib, with his unique precious, a separation, he was a Porish, he shunned the pleasures of this world. In reality, Rav Aaron Leib was a Ben Olam Haba who just happened to live in Olam Hazeh. I'm not recommending that his lifestyle is something we should even strive for. It's not on our level at all. It's not for our Avodas Hashem. But there is such a degree. We've seen from a number of examples, some coming from the worst places of humanity, Gehenna on earth, some coming from the most exalted of humanity, that there is a way to separate from bodily needs, bodily focus, bodily desire, from being the B'nai Basar. Too much focus on B'nai Basar. Look at society. Look where it gets us. I'm going to quote further from the Sefer. The Ger Rebbe, who is more than 30 years his junior, was astounded by Rav Aaron Leib's minimal physical requirements. On their first overseas trip, he noticed Rav Aaron Leib was sleeping a total of about 2.5 hours in a 24-hour period. This led the Ger Rebbe to remark, "It is hard to keep up with the enthusiasm and love for spreading Torah that Rav Aaron Leib has." On another trip, the Ger Rebbe asked the local physician who was accompanying them about Rav Aaron Leib's eating habits. He couldn't fathom how the Rosh Hashiva functioned with the minuscule quantities of food he ingested. Rav Aaron Leib overheard the conversation and he said, he jested, "Are you trying to take away the doctor's parnassah?" Rav Yehuda Adas, who traveled with Rav Aaron Leib to France, reported, "When Rav Aaron Leib was abroad, he saw individuals and community leaders for more than 16 hours a day. He also managed to learn and daven. The only thing he ate all day was boiled potatoes and carrots, which his son brought with him from Israel." Finally, Rav Adas, who was accompanying him, could no longer hold back. "How does the Rosh Hashiva have the strength to follow such a grueling schedule while barely eating any food?" Rav Aaron Leib simply replied, "Zelo kasha, it's not hard. Im rotzim, if you want, mitraglim leze, you can get used to it." So again, I'm not saying this over because I'm going to eat boiled potatoes and carrots and a hard-boiled egg. That's not what I mean. He was a Ben Olam Hazeh who happened to be in Olam Haba, the Gadol Dar. But we do have to understand on some degree for what we utilize and enjoy the pleasures of Olam Hazeh, which is to serve God. Wine could be used, enjoyment, it's part of a meal, it's part of a Simchas Yom Tov, it's part of a Bismillah, Chuppah, Kedushin, Shabbos. But again, we're using it, we're elevating it to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Every time you make a bracha, what you're essentially doing is elevating this world, that mundane apple. Kan kodem bracha, kan adar acha bracha. You're elevating that mundane apple and making it into something kedusha. It's a mitzvah now. So I just wanted to read a few excerpts from Rav Aaron Leib's tzava, his spiritual will. It actually has, if you didn't read it, you should really read this biography. The biography of Aaron Leib Steinman by Art School. It's unbelievable. So it actually has the his handwritten, a copy of the handwritten. And then it has a copy of the Hebrew, the Lashon HaKodesh, he wrote it in Hebrew, and then the English. I'm only going to read the English for tonight, but you can go through it in the book and read the Hebrew. Rav Aaron Leib, quote, "One, I ask that there be no hespedim for me, neither during the funeral nor at any other time. Excuse me, there should be no gatherings of any type. Do not eulogize me in any way. Do not write articles about me in the newspaper. Not the dailies, the weeklies, or the monthlies. Do not publish my photo. Do not write biographies, as is commonly done for others." So you might be wondering why I'm reading from his biography. So they went to ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, what they should do, because people could learn from it. And Rav Chaim said, "You should write it. Do not print notices about..." This is someone who was so removed, he wanted nothing in Olam Haza while he was alive, and certainly nothing from Olam Haza after his passing. Do not print notices about my funeral. Do not announce it via loudspeaker over the radio. There should be 10 people at the funeral. Try to avoid any delays between my passing and my burial. My burial should be as close as possible to my passing. My burial place should be amongst the simple people. Do not write any titles on the tombstone. And there's a picture of the tombstone, and there's Mamish no to'arim. There is no complimentary terms, nothing. He said what you should write on the tombstone. Po peinun. What's peinun? Po menach, but it's not mem, okay? Po nikbar. Rav Aaron Yehuda Leib bar Rav Tzvi Steinman. That's what you want to write. And if you look, that's actually what's written. And it says on the matseva, Hanusach al pitzavato. The nusach of this matseva is according to his desire. So Hamevin Yavin, that this isn't really who such a simple person who lays here, but that's what he ordered that we write. My monument should be the simplest and least expensive. Do not waste money on expensive burial plot. If they wish, they can give charity without purchasing a burial place. During the days when it is customary to visit the kever at the conclusion of Shiva, Shloshim, on the Yurtzeit, do not waste more time than necessary. It is better to use that time to study constantly without idle talk. If finding a place to serve as chazin will take away time from learning, it is preferable to use the time to learn Torah l'shem shemayim. Anyone who wants to help me shall learn a chapter of Mishnayos daily. Women can recite 10 kapitlach of Shabbos, 10 kapitlach of Tehillim, including Shabbos and Yom Tov. Only those Torah writings that I reviewed and prepared for publication should be published. I request not to be referred to as tzaddik or yirei shamayim, so I am not embarrassed in the world of truth. I ask forgiveness if I offended anyone. If there is anyone to whom I owe money and he will not collect, please forgive me. My descendants should not follow my beer. Am I pronouncing it right? B-I-E-R? Yeah. As is the custom of Yerushalayim, Nekuda 14 was private instructions to family, omitted at their request. 15, the Sefer Torah I loaned to Yeshiva Gaon Yaakov is my personal property, signed Aaron Yura Leib Steinmid. Since many err about me, P.S., added 24th Mar Cheshvan 5743, since many err about me, I am advising not to name children after me. Parentheses, although I do not forbid this. So it is possible, we've seen many examples tonight of people, great people, survivors, Kodesh Kodshim, Rav Aaron Leib, the Gadol, Mamish, the Gadol Ador, Lahavdil, the survivor who was on death row for 40 years, which is a fate that nobody should. It's possible to become less involved in the gashmistic of this world and more attached to the ruchnistic aspects of this world. And it's something we have to work on. It's an avoda. When we see the way that life is going and the world is going today, what does gashmius focus help a person? What does it do for us? It's such a call from the Ribbono Shel Olam to wake up and see that he is running the show. Beyond human capability, page 229. This does not mean you should not eat and drink and engage in physical matter. So I think we clarified that. No one's going to hang up here and stop eating, and that's not what we mean. It does not mean you should not eat and drink and engage in physical matters. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who did not eat and drink on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, he says that to the people. Mayim lachem lo achalti, mayim lo shasisi, ze'arba'im yom. He did eat and drink when he was here on earth. Chazal teach that when it says Moshe was an Ish Elokim, a man of God, very interesting, this is Medrash Devarim Rabbah, it means Ish Elokim. So look, that's a contradiction. Was he Ish or was he Elokim? So the Medrash explains his upper half was godly and his lower half was human. He was an Ish. That would be the Olam Haza, gashmistic side of oneself. He was also Chelek Elokai, which would be the ruchnius, neshama side of oneself. So a person like Moshe Rabbeinu, we can't say, but because we can't fathom his madrega, that he was obviously a more, silly, I don't know how to say it. He was a ruchniastic Aved Hashem par excellence. So we have to ask ourselves, where do we lie on this spectrum between Ish and Elokim? What's the focus of our lives? In other words, he didn't completely use, in other words, he, Moshe, did not completely lose his humanness. So he was Moshe Rabbeinu, Eloki, in a sense, Elokai Mimal, Chelek Elokai Mimal, but he was also a man. And this paragraph reminded me very much of an insight that my father-in-law shared with me many years ago. Wait, can you see my screen? Can you see the Sefariah? Okay. So in Parashas, Kitisa, Sefer Shemos, Parashas Kitisa, Paraklamid Beis is the sin of Chet Ha'iga. Oh, wait, I want to move you to here so you could see Rashi also. Okay? Paraklamid Beis, Pasuk Aleph, Sefer Shemos. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe laredes min ha'har. The people see that Moshe is delayed. Chazal say, don't read it boshesh, but bashesh. The sixth hour came according to their calculations, and Moshe didn't come down from the mountain. Vayikahal ha'am al Aaron, vayamu elav. The people gather in great strength against Aaron, and they say to him, kum, get up. Asay lanu Elohim, oy vavoy. Oh, 1 second. I'm clicking. I'm trying to highlight. There we go. I'm going to try not to highlight, because when I highlight, I mess up the screen. Asei lanu Elohim, make for us a God, asher yelchu lefaneinu, that will go before us. Why? Ki zeh, look at this, Moshe ha'ish, asher helanu me'eretz Mitzrayim lo yodanu mehayelo, because this Moshe man, who took us out from the land of Egypt, we do not know what happened to him. So Rashi says, I'm going to show you Rashi. Rashi says, what happened? Ki boshesh Moshe. Like the Targum says, Lashon Ichor, he was late. Let's look at the story that Rashi tells us. Ki kasha'ala Moshe lahar, when Moshe went up to the mountain, he said to the Bnei Yisrael, at the end of 40 days, I am coming within the sixth hour. Kisvurim him, besoch sheishos. Kisvurim him sheoso yom sha'ala min aminyanu. They miscalculated. They thought the day he went up was part of the counting. But he said, full days, arbam yom vilelo imo, 40 days with the night. So the day he went up did not have the night, vayhi boker. So he went up on Zion Sivan. So 40 days brings you to Shivasar Batamuz. So on the 16th, this is where I don't want to do the calculations with you. The real point is I want to show you what the Satan did. Biyudvav Batamuz, ba Satan, the Irbev es Ha'olam. On the 16th of Tammuz, the Satan came and he confused the world. He showed them an image of darkness and thick darkness and confusion. Lomar saying, Vadai meis Moshe. Certainly Moshe died, and that's why confusion came to the world. Amar lahem, meis Moshe. The Satan said, Moshe has died because the 6 hours come, he didn't come. Well, the point is that they saw, and furthermore, Rashi says, "Kizem Moshe Ish, kimin dmus Moshe her elahem hasatan, shenosim oso ba'avir rekiya shemayim." The Satan showed them some image of Moshe, and he was being carried in the air, in the firmament of heaven. So we see from both of these Rashi's on this pasuk, Lamed Beis pasuk Aleph, that the Satan showed them an image of Moshe in Shemayim. First Rashi says the Satan showed us that Vadai mate Moshe certainly died. And now Rashi tells us the Satan showed them an image of Moshe being carried like in the air, in the firmament of the heaven. That's on the words, Kizem Moshe Ha'ish, quoting Mesach HaShabbos, okay? The Satan showed them an image of Moshe being carried in Shamayim in the firmament of heaven. Interestingly, it doesn't say that Moshe died. Rashi just says they saw some image of Moshe floating in the sky. So when they go to Aaron, what do they say? Kizeh Moshe ha'ish. Asher ha'elanu me'eretz v'tzayim lo yadanu me'hayelo. Why don't they just say, Kizeh Moshe asher ha'elanu me'eretz v'tzayim lo yadanu me'hayelo? What are they adding with the word ish? Everyone knows who Moshe is. Everyone knows Moshe took them out of Mitzrayim. They're speaking to Aaron, Moshe's brother. What are you teaching me by putting in Kizeh Moshe ha'ish lo yadanu me'hayelo? Just say Moshe. We don't know where he is. What's ha'ish? So my father told me a number of years ago, beautiful var. They were saying, we're human beings. We're bus over them. We might be the Dor Dea. We might be the Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim. We might be the Dor Midbar. Everything is miraculous, but we're human beings. We see that Moshe has ascended to the heavens in some sort of heavenly image. He's being carried up there in the firmaments of the heavens. He's not a man anymore. He has attained the status of some kind of surreal being. Maybe he's like a malach. We need a man to be our leader because we are human beings. Zeh Moshe ha'ish asher elanu me'eretz v'tzayim lo yadanu me'hayelo. The man Moshe, the human being Moshe, the one who ate and drank with Yisro, the one whose mother had to hide him, the one who was floating down the basket in a river, the one who fell on his face to daven for us. The man Moshe is gone and we don't know what happened to him. And a leader needs to be here with the people. So it's very nice that he's floating in the sky, but what's it going to help us that he's floating in the sky? We don't need a Malach Moshe. We need an Ish Moshe. So it's proof from the Torah that our leaders, our founders, our Gedolim, our Nevi'im, were human beings. We don't believe in the doctrine that they were angels leading us. They were people. The question is, how much do we balance our physical desire, needs, and wants with our spiritual desires, needs, and wants? But certainly, we have to take care of our physical self. Is that Moshe Ish? Is that Moshe Ha'ish? We need a man to lead us. But Satan is showing us that he's floating in the Rakia Shemaim, in the Avir. What does that help me? That he's in the Avir. I don't need a Malach, so make us a replacement because the Ish has gone. So we see, of course, we need to take care of our Gashmiyus side. But how much do we balance? I'm asking myself. You should ask yourself. What's my balance between external and internal? Between guf and neshama? Between Gashmiyus and Ruchnius? Between conditional, external love? If you give me this God, then I love you. And unconditional, internal love, which is the connection of the soul, the connection of the chelek alokai mimal to the ma'al. What do we focus on in life? What message do we transmit to the people with whom we share our homes? What is our focus on? When we eat, when we dress, when we travel, when we vacation, when we converse. It's a kasha, and it's hard, because the society in which we live, Hashem Yirachem Aleinu, is so gashmistic focused that we have to battle even more to make sure we are ruchnistic focused. It's harder when the environment is so harsh. I don't mean the Yiddish Welt, I mean the Welt in which we live. And it's so gashmistic focused that it's a real challenge. Being in a world of ruchnius does not mean you should fast all week. Rather, even while you are involved in the physical world as needed, your mind and heart should be attached to the Creator and Ruchnius. And this is possible. It's possible to do your shopping. I think I told you this once. I said to my brother one time, and I'm in Costco, everything I put down on the conveyor belt, I think I need this for this. Okay, this is a Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. I'm buying laundry, the Talmid Chacham, not me, I'm saying in the house. You think of the Gemara when you do laundry, Talmid Chacham, who goes out with a stain on the jacket, it's Chayiv Misa. We have to be clean. We need food. The grape juice is a Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. So my brother smiled. He said, do you tell that to the cashier when you unload your shopping cart? So even when you're, it was a joke, even when you're involved in the physical world as needed, your mind and heart, we have to strive to attach ourselves to the Creator and to Ruchnius. When you live this way, there will be no fundamental difference between when you're involved in Ruchnius and when you're involved in Gashus, because really everything becomes Ruchnius. If you're preparing a meal for someone in need, so if you have the right kavana, so that's not a gosh mystic task. Oh my gosh. If you're making a meal for someone in need, so if you think v'haftarecha kamocha, if you think bikur cholim, if you think Hashem should send her fushlim, if you think v'nishmartem al denaf shosechem, so it's a totally ruchniistic task. Well, you happen to be involved in gashmis. Let's just finish this paragraph. The only difference will be as to what the body is actually doing. So my body is actually preparing chicken with potatoes and carrots to send to someone's house. But the soul is totally attached to the spiritual realm, and that becomes an exercise in internality and in avodas Hashem. So we will stop here. It's the end of a paragraph, actually. And it's maybe homework for us for the week to see where our focus is. Moshe was an Ish HaElokim. How much are we attached here, and how much have we managed to degree of our level, degree in our level, separate our physical selves from our spiritual selves so we can better detach from the unnecessaries of this world and closer attach ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We shall share a week of Besuros Tovos. May the Neshama of Meir Fron, Meir Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah, Hashem, may our continuous Aliyah and the merit of the Torah that we share. I thank you all, each of you, for taking the time to learn with us this evening. Besuros Tovos, and have a wonderful